He is the new voice of talk radio, Alexander Danilov.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Solutionsology Radio. My guest tonight, Coot Blackson, one of the more inspirational people that I've come across, actually, through Krupp Communications, who is managing his publicity. They asked me if I wanted to speak with him. So I started doing research. I started watching, listening to some of the interviews that that he had done, and completely amazed at the story, the path, the journey, and obviously what's manifested itself into kind of a long book, also very powerful, very informative and inspirational book. And Coot Blackson is on with me now. Coot, thank you so much for coming on tonight to speak about the incredible story that is your life.
Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And your book, You Are the One, is the book. It's we're going to get into it in a little bit. I did want to start off with the beginning of your life and where it was, how you were. You were always an avid reader, a voracious reader, I would say, actually. So obviously that's impacted your life view. It's impacted how you saw things, why you see things a certain way today. And again, when you take in all this context and all these other perspectives, it almost kind of blurs our own perspective and gives us a little bit of an identity crisis, but you never really had that. So let's talk about how these books and how, you know, you read about 800-900 books or something like that, I believe you said, through, you know, 8-9 years old. So, I mean, that's very, it's impressive on its own.
Yeah, when I was age eight, I read my first self-help book by a woman called Chekti Gawain called Creative Visualization. It blew my mind open to the possibilities of life. You know, I grew up quite poor in a very poor and dangerous part of London, so I didn't have a lot of resources, but I had access to information, and information that really helped me really get in touch with who I am and get a sense of what I really wanted with my life. And so I was always obsessed with the questions of, like, who am I and why am I here? And you know, why do some people who have nothing seem totally fulfilled and content? And why do some people sometimes have everything? Why are they miserable and sometimes not happy? So I started on a quest, and I read hundreds of books from the Eastern mystics, the Western mystics, really in search of answers. And they were my friends and pointed me in a direction. But really, you know, as a young boy, I always felt a deep calling to serve people. And my father's a minister, so my first memories also as a young boy was I grew up as a chubby kid in Ghana, West Africa, and I remember being around age 6, 8, 7, seeing a crippled woman crawling on the floor, and she picked up the sand that that he, literally my dad, walked on, wipes on her face and stood up. So I grew up seeing miracles, you know, blind people seeing and deaf people hearing. And age 8, I started speaking in my father's audience. Age 14, I was ordained as a minister. And age 17, 18, I left everything behind because I really knew in my heart of hearts that that wasn't my destiny, but it took a lot of courage to own my truth, because I felt like I was just living, you know, his life, living his expectations for my life. And I was terrified of losing him, losing love, losing being outcast. And so I was really afraid of telling myself the truth for the longest period of time. So, you know, books and information really helped inspire me. It was a book by a man called Jay Krishnamurti, an Indian mystic, that really blew my mind open, because I could really relate to his life. He was being groomed to take over a spiritual organization since a very young man, and he left everything behind. And once I read that book, I knew what I had to do, which was follow my heart and not live someone else's life, because I really got the sense of I could become successful by everyone else's standards, but if I'm not truly living my own truth and my own life, I'd be miserable. If I don't have myself, I don't have anything. So books and information gave me a lot of courage.
Now, you covered a lot of stuff I want to cover too, which is a perfect and very simple segue. So you mentioned all the miracles, and I know a lot of people don't believe you or won't believe you when you say it, even though you're obviously seeing it, you've seen it, you experienced it. But that's part of the magic and the miracle of itself, is that even when people are told that what someone else had seen and experienced and all that, it doesn't matter, right? That they still don't believe you. And there's a cynicism about it. There's a cynicism about following your own journey and making your own path, and there's you know, sometimes labeled as stupid, and just do what you have to do, everything's all laid out for you. But you didn't want that. Again, you were ordained at 14, and you made a decision that was gutsy, difficult, crazy, and ultimately, in my opinion, inspiring. And that's the most important thing about it, is you did something that you weren't doing it for publicity, you weren't doing it for any other reason other than a personal fulfillment, and that you can do something different and bigger and even more game-changing than what your father was doing.
Yeah, I knew if I followed his expectations that I'd be miserable, and I felt like I literally felt like I was killing my soul, and I could see my entire future out in front of me. And I knew the truth. When I was ordained as a 14-year-old kid in my father's ministry, you know, thousands of people having their hopes and dreams pinned on me, I knew in that moment that that was not my path. I had this sinking intuition, this sinking feeling, but I was terrified. You know, I didn't want to lose his love. I didn't want to be outcast. And I think many times we all feel a truth in our heart that perhaps we're not acknowledging, and sometimes we're afraid to acknowledge the truth because we're afraid of the consequences. Mm-hmm. You know, we're afraid that we won't be, the deepest fear is I won't be, if I'm really speak my truth, if I'm really myself, I won't be loved, that you won't love me, that I'll lose, that the life we built will lose that. So we're afraid of the consequences. So we often rationalize, we lie to ourselves, we BS ourselves, we pretend, we settle, we distract ourselves with so many other activities so that we don't have to feel. So at that point, you know, I tried all of those things. But it took a tremendous amount of courage, and I made a decision that was really courageous as a young boy, because maybe I didn't really have anything to lose, but it's something that I've lived with ever since, something that I've lived by ever since, and it was the decision to never compromise my truth, to never compromise my knowing, because I decided nothing was really worth it. And I think for me that was a miracle. You know, people often, you mentioned a few folks who might be listening might be wondering, did that really happen? Did those miracles really happen? Like, I grew up seeing these miracles. It's one thing to see them on TV. I grew up seeing my father literally in his underpants. I grew up seeing him, you know, behind the scenes. I grew up seeing it with my own eyes. I'd go to school and tell my friends and my teachers about these miracles, you know, blind people seeing, deaf people hearing, people standing up out of wheelchairs, and they would laugh at me, or they were cynical, until one day my teacher came to my dad's church and saw it happening herself and couldn't believe it. But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. We often go, wow, is that possible? Those miracles, really? Can that really happen? Number one, I feel it's like how we come to live in a culture where we don't believe in the miraculous, when literally, my friend, every single one of us listening to this conversation right now, if you just take a deep breath, you want to see a miracle? You don't have to go to the Himalayas. You don't have to go to some church. You don't have to go to India. Just take a deep breath. Everyone, because if you take a deep breath right now and you just breathe, just do that. It's like we are being breathed. I mean, whether you believe in God, whether you believe in consciousness, whether you believe in nothing, it is unarguable that something, some intelligence, something is breathing us. We are being breathed by a life force. I feel that that force, the intelligence, because we're not struggling to breathe, that same intelligence is digesting our food, is enabling us to speak and see colors and sights and sounds. To me, that same intelligence is functioning all of existence. And if we really take a moment, the simplicity, it's so simple to just breathe. It's like, whoa. It's like a wow moment to go, wow, I'm able to breathe. Trillions of processes are happening inside of me right now. I'm able to move my hands. I'm able to eat ice cream. I'm able to have orgasms. I'm able to smile. I'm able to feel love. We are living, breathing miracles, man. And there is nothing to be cynical about the fact of what we are. That's amazing. I say, be in awe of yourself. Be in awe of what you are, because you are a miracle.
Once again, speaking with Kuth Blackson, he's the author of You Are the One. He is a human potential visionary, and a lot of people might not know what that means, but you actually kind of outlined it just now, is we have to be able to look inwards. We're so busy looking out, and we have all these TV shows and all these things that, you know, the idea of people watching, and so many people love people watching because it takes them away from looking at themselves and bettering themselves or anything like that, but also realizing who they are personally, whether good or bad, or, you know, we all have room to work on ourselves, but at the heart of it is being at peace with who we are and where we are in life, and there's a bliss to that. And you talk about that a lot in your site, Boundless Bliss, Bali, is obviously all about that. And I'd like for you to talk more about that before we get into the book.
Sure, sure. The Boundless Bliss Bali is the journey I do to is the journey I take people on to Bali. It's approximately 11.5-12 day experiential, transformational, immersion seminar training without walls that I do in Bali, where I take 20 people from around the world and I create a unique, dynamic, transformational process that is designed to help you identify your blocks, free you from your past, help you connect with who you are, what your true purpose and gifts are and life purposes in this life, and help you give that, more of that, to the world, and help you live that and create, you know, the life you really want. It's an amazing, amazing process. See, I believe that who and what we are at the depth of our being, and this is also what I talk about in my book, but in terms of Bali and the work I do, I believe that who and what we are essentially is whole and complete. We're born whole and complete. You know, when we're born as children, we're born in touch with our true nature, our essence. A child will jump on the table and sing and dance and scream and shout, and it doesn't care. It will run up to you and just give you a hug. It's full of love. You know, it doesn't care, you know, can I sing or am I fat? It just expresses itself. It's free, in touch with joy. And I think when we look into a child's eyes, we can all see that innocence. When we look into a child's eyes, we can all see that freedom. It reminds us of what we were. But then, you know, we're born, we meet our parents, some of whom are a little crazy, some of whom are challenged. They're just doing the best that they can. And maybe we face pain, trauma, abuse, neglect, abandonment, whatever our story is, whatever our challenges were growing up as children. You know, so as children, we start learning all sorts of ways to disconnect, to not feel the pain of our environment, the pain of our situation. And we start shutting off parts of ourselves to just not feel, ultimately to survive. Secondly, we learn to go out into the world, you know, and we start developing a persona and a mask, you know, in response to our parents and caretakers and upbringing and environment, in terms of who do I need to be in order for you to love me. And we start developing a mask, a persona, a personality. We hold tightly onto this. We become this persona, maybe the nice guy, the caretaker, the quiet person, the shy person, whoever we think we need to be in order to get love, validation, approval from other people. And again, we hide parts of ourselves. And then the more tightly we hold on to this, it becomes an identity. And then the fullness of our expression, the fullness of our light gets locked into this character that we call ourselves. So I ask people, is who you are who you really are, or is it who you've been conditioned to be? Because the degree to which we've been conditioned is also the degree to which we're not free. And to truly be blissful, to truly be happy, we have to be ourselves. But we've learned through conditioning to not be ourselves. We've learned through conditioning and survival mechanisms and tactics that with good intention we've developed to survive, to function, to get certain needs met, to avoid certain feelings. We've learned to disconnect, and as a result, we're not fully able to feel the fullness of bliss, the fullness of who we are. And it's sad because, you know, we crave it. And as a result, we often go out into the world, and whether we all have different ways to try and reconnect. I believe every behavior underlying every behavior is an intention to try and get a certain need, whether we're drinking, whether we're having sex, whether we're a workaholic, whether we're a shopaholic, whatever it is, we're trying to reconnect with that source of bliss that we've disconnected with. Because a child doesn't really need very much. A child just doesn't need a Ferrari. A child doesn't need an Oscar. A child is just like in awe of the wonder of the moment. It's in bliss because its true nature is bliss. So I think we get to recognize this. We get to peel our layers away. We get to let go of the emotions and stuff that we've developed so we can reconnect with what we are. It's what we are. We are bliss. We are joy. We are love at the depth of our being. And that's what helps people do, peel that away.
Absolutely. And another thing that you talk about at length, there's a lot of good stuff that you talk about at length, but in the book specifically, just more towards the end, the 161, 162 area, you talk about acceptance, right? And it's a very powerful word. And the story that's about that is the king and three magical words, this is good, right? And that's so hard for us to say because we, you know, when something happens to us, we normally, even if it's good, Coot, and this is the crazy part, even if it's good, we get nervous, we get scared, and we don't want to admit that this is good. When it's something bad, obviously we hide, we deny it, we avoid it. But a lot of stuff that happens to us is good. And in the case of the story with the king, it is kind of a weird path to realizing it. But I'd like for you to share that story because I think it's very telling of this whole experience that we're going through here.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I want to say is many times we think we know what is good for us. You know, we think we know what's best for us. We think, and then we get attached to a certain outcome being a certain way. And then when it doesn't end up that way, we suffer. So we get attached and then we suffer. And I think part of freedom, part of real happiness is learning to really accept what is. Part of suffering arises because we resist what is. We resist what's happening in this moment. We resist the weather. We resist, you know, a situation. We resist the fact we're in traffic. And the more we fight what is, the more we lose, the more we fight what is, the more we stress out, the more we fight what is happening now. See, the root of suffering, and it's connected to the story, the root of suffering really arises any moment that you're suffering. If you listen to this conversation, just check yourself. Any moment you're suffering, usually the thought that's spinning in your mind that you're not consciously aware of goes something like this. The experience that I'm having is not the experience I should be having. Essentially, I should be having some other experience than I should be having right now. Instant suffering. Instant suffering. But when you can recognize the experience I'm having is the experience I'm having, this is what I'm having. And if you can accept that, that doesn't mean you have to stay in that situation or wallow in that situation or indulge in that situation or be a victim to that situation. But when you stop resisting it, then it frees up your energy rather than fighting it to go to move into, okay, what can I do about the situation? What's in my control? What actions can I take right now when I'm not resisting it? And I think that really frees us up and gives us back our responsibility, you know, in connection to the story you shared. I also believe that, you know, every single thing that happens to us is an opportunity. Number one, I believe that we're born and we incarnate into this human experience as human beings, you know, that we're souls having a human experience because, you know, we're here to learn. We're here to learn, grow, and evolve. We're not here to be perfect. So events, ultimately, we will face obstacles. Ultimately, challenges will happen. But I believe every relationship, every experience, even if it's challenging, are like the, is like the, how shall I say, the dumbbells for our soul to prepare us for really what we're here to do, to make us the people that we are, to develop our character, our inner strength, to develop our fortitude. I look at people like Nelson Mandela could have looked at his situation when he was put in prison for 26 years and been mad at God and said, I'm mad at the world, I'm upset, I'm a victim, and resisted it. Somehow he had to accept, this is where I'm at. And in that acceptance, he chose to focus on how he could prepare himself, how he could ready himself for what he was here to do. And he ended, and as a result, when he, you know, was released from prison, he was, let's see, much more ready. He was ready to lead a country and maybe affect, change the world. So sometimes I say, when things don't work out the way we want them to work out, is really the grace and the blessing of the universe. We have to learn to trust that ultimately, and I believe everything is always working out for our good, even if we can't see it right now. We have to start learning in those moments when things don't go according to plan or we face challenges. I think it's important that we learn to ask ourselves not just, well, why is this happening to me, but to really ask ourselves, what can I learn from this? What's the opportunity here? What's great about this? And I think that's the key. And people can, you know, I didn't get into the full story, but I think people can read more about the story also in the book.
Absolutely. Once again, the book is You Are the One, Kuth Blackson. Website is kuthblackson.com. You have a very powerful, very inspirational YouTube channel as well. Obviously, you're all over Twitter. You have almost 100,000 followers there. We can't all be wrong in following you and getting your message. The other site that I mentioned earlier, the Bali trip, boundlessblissbali.com. The book, You Are the One. Very good, very powerful, and a lot of amazing stuff in here. Your experiences, what you've learned, what you've seen, what you've read, and obviously you putting it and sharing that is a very important piece to this. And I appreciate you coming on, Kuth, and sharing your story and doing what you're doing, which is, again, really important to the universe and who we are as a people. We need to be able to be happy and be accepting of not only our successes, but also our shortcomings and being able to know that we are human at the end of the day. But there is so much that we can do, so much that is within our control that we need to be able to, you know, kind of rise up and get up and do that.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's been a real pleasure. And I think each of us have the potential for greatness. And, you know, part of the book is about reminding you finally, just look, no one's coming. You know, no, your parents don't owe you anything. The government's not coming. No one's coming because you're already here. And if you've been given a dream or a vision, that dream has chosen you for a reason because you are the perfect person to fulfill that dream. You're the one. Own it. Step into it. Live it. The world is waiting for each of us.
Absolutely. Kuth, thanks again so much. And best of luck and much success with this book.
Thank you so much, man. Really appreciate it.
Likewise. Thank you.